everyone, welcome to another episode of the Jazz Transcription Clinic podcast. First episode of 2024. We are in a great company here with Joel Fram and his solo on a blues in F, concert F. The blues is After Supper. I have transcribed three solos on this track, on this video. I started with Scott Hamilton, had a lot of fun. A lot of discussions raised about that solo, because there were discussions about how to write certain phrases, certain accents, and it was a good chance for us to understand a bit more the process of transcribing and what is involved when you transcribe, and how to compromise with what you hear and how to put it on a stuff, music stuff. So today I want to talk a little bit about this wonderful solo played by Joel Fram. He has a great connection, of course, with the tradition, with the past, with the language used by the great players, but also there are hints that reveals that he's a contemporary player with some harmonic tools and some rhythmic tools that I'm going to talk about. So without any further ado, let's listen to the whole solo first, and then I will start analyzing it. Exactly. So I have created here in Sounds Lies, for those of you who are asking what sort of software I'm using for transcription. So this is not a software, it's a web platform called Sounds Lies. It's a great one. I don't get any money for saying that, but I'm praising high the use of Sounds Lies. You can slow down, you can loop section, and you can create certain sections that you can divide. I have already prepared some clips. This is how they are called in Sounds Lies. So for example, first chorus, and you already have selected the first chorus, and then you can loop stuff, you can slow down, you can transpose in different keys, you can print in PDF. Very powerful web platform. So first chorus, he opens with a statement pretty much using the inflection of the blues scale. So the blue note, the minor third over G7, this note here in the second bar, which is also the seventh, flat seven of C7. but he keeps playing the B flat. So there's no trace of B natural here. And of course, B flat is the flat 7 on C7, but is also the blue note on G7. So it's just, you know, a very simple way to highlight. The other note that Joel Frame is stressing about is the A, which is the 9th over G7, and it's the 13th over C7. And he resolves on bar 5 of the blues over the A. That is the 13th over C7, great note. And then there is the 6th bar with a C sharp diminished chord. And he likes to play along with the chord. So he plays the diminished scale, the half whole starting from this is not the diminished scale. So he plays along the chord, C sharp diminish. We will see that in the next chorus he will use also the diminished scale, but not in this case. He's using more so in the 6th bar there is C sharp diminished chord, and he's playing along the chord. So the notes C sharp, E, G, and B flat are in this little phrase here. And then once he reaches the apex on the B flat, he comes down on the arpeggio. To resolve on D, which is the 5th of G7, and it's great. And here he starts what I found really brilliant idea. So do D, it's a major 6th, the interval, but he's playing the 5th and the 3rd over G7. And the simple idea is to descend chromatically to reach the B and the G sharp over E7. So it's a brilliant idea to play D and B over G7. And then in the same bar, he goes down C sharp and B flat. And then the next bar, C and A, and then B and G sharp. Listen. So brilliant, very simple, but it sounds so nice, so settled, so logical. And it's just the beginning of the solo, so you don't have to overdo. But just play simple, nicely, logical. Before he hits the same pattern, he plays a little group of notes around the target, almost an enclosure. And here he remembers that we are in 2024, even though the solo was played probably a couple of years ago, but still, he remembers to be a modern player. So over A minor 7 in bar 9, he plays a couple of arpeggios built on A minor 7, 9, 11. So starting on the D, coming down. And then, preparing the D7, so the dominant chord, he plays a very altered phrase, probably thinking a lot in A flat dominant sharp 11, which is the triton substitution of the D7. And we can see traces of that with this A flat and then F sharp, which is the G flat. And then there is the D natural, which is the sharp 11. And then here, look here, there is exactly the arpeggio of A flat major going down to the bebop scale of A flat, do do do, with both the sevens, and to resolve on F natural, which is the flat seven of G7. And the phrase is just gorgeous, because after two simple arpeggios, he articulates with a lot of alterations and dissonances that create a great tension and contribution, and resolves perfectly on G7. Oh, gorgeous. I have to practice this line. And then there is the turnaround. Again, triton substitution, right? I should write probably here A flat, G flat, and B flat, A flat. So triton substitution, A flat dominant, sharp 11, right? The sharp 11 is the D natural, which is the tonic of the original chord, right? Okay, let's move to the second chorus. Second chorus starts, and here, of course, is developing ideas, is getting more complex rhythmically. You know, he introduces triplets, quintuplets, and you can see, you know, triplets over semi-demiquavers, triplets over quavers, just because in the second chorus you can start talking deeper. Let's listen. Oh, this is a beautiful, beautiful bluesy pattern built on the blues scale to transition from bar 2 to bar 3, so C7 to G7. Listen to that. Whoa, I love it. Beautiful line. Again, triton substitution. This is pretty easy reasoning. Da, do, di, do, da. And then he goes flat 9. And then arpeggio of G major. And then, beautiful, B flat, A flat, E flat. And this we could call it C flat, as I did call it after that. And this is clearly D flat 7, sharp 11. Again, triton substitution, but the line is simply gorgeous. So the debate here is, should we analyze all the notes referring to G7? So you say flat 9, 3rd, 5th, tonic, and then you go sharp 9, flat 9, sharp 5, or flat 13, 3rd, sharp 9, 3rd, sharp 9, flat 9, tonic. I'm not a big fan of this reasoning, because it doesn't have a sound and it sounds too complex. You have to try to calculate a lot. But if you think that this line is built over a D flat Lydian dominant, which is the referring scale for the triton substitution, so it's basically Mixolydian, D flat Mixolydian with sharp 11, so with a G natural. And these notes from here are all notes part of that scale, and it sounds pretty. It sounds reasonable in that scale. So I love to understand what is the easiest way, even for my ears, to recognize what has been played, and then try to play it myself, of course, when I play. So this is a gorgeous line using the triton substitution, the Lydian dominant mode, resolving onto the third. So a guide tone of C7. Beautiful. And then he keeps going, and here there is another Lydian dominant of C7 this time, which is the last note and the third last note of this line, which is basically an arpeggio. Oof. Which contributes even this to create tension and to create expectations for what's coming next. Listen to the whole phrase from here, probably. Again, over the C sharp diminished. This time I think do 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 do. Yeah, this is part of the diminished scale, but he's playing more over the diminished arpeggio, but all those notes are the half whole or the whole half starting from C sharp. Beautiful. So after this articulated line, there's a very simple line over G7. Nothing to say about it. Just saying that after a lot of tension created here, it's good to have some release, right? So that your ears can relax. And then over the E7 chord, which already has a lot of drive, you start creating some tension again. Release, tension, and then there will be a sort of resolution over A-7, but he will prepare the big resolution 2-5-1, right? Whoa. Very similar phrase to what he plays here at the top. You remember this one? It's very similar to this resolution, but an octave lower. So, you know, some licks around the blues scale, some phrases that you like, you might try to practice in 12 keys, and after a while, they will come out in your playing. So what he plays on A-7 again is a bunch of arpeggios. On D7 again he plays the sharp 9, so a lot of tension to end this little phrase on the major 7, but this note, the C sharp over D7, is just the blue note, the flat 5 of the G7, which is our implant key. And we transition into the third and last chorus of his solo. Right, what can we say about here? He's like teaching us the basics of the blues. Play over a tripletish sound. Play around the blues scale. Disregard the chords. You know, G7, C7, G7, G7. Play a motif. A motif is 2-3 notes with a certain rhythm. And repeat it. Develop that. Don't be afraid of repeating yourself. It's a great key in jazz. Play solid with a solid rhythm. Repeat. Develop. Right? And then you exit with a new idea, which will be the idea that you carry on into the next phrase. Right? And again, This is the diminished scale, the whole half starting on C sharp diminished. And here is just a pattern over that scale. Or over the arpeggio. Beautiful line, very complex, six doublets, five fifth doublets, triplet of over semi-demi quavers. Do you think he's thinking all that? I don't think so. He's just filling the space here. This is what a great player does. He doesn't think six doublets, fifth doublets. He's just filling the space with something that makes sense to him, of course, and to the situation, to the momentum that he's playing that line. So this complex line, probably in another context, he wouldn't have played it. And here, remember in past episodes, I said that usually, I mean, naturally, improvisers are to develop their solos in order to reach the apex two-thirds of their solo. And this is, I think we can consider this the apex of his solo with this altissimo note, which is the flat 7 over E7. So the chord is already carrying a lot of tension and he's screaming those notes and articulating a simple phrase, but because it's so high, it's not so simple to play on the saxophone, but it's over E7 flat 9 idea. And resolving, you know, over the tonic of A minor 7. Right, so we can say that that is the apex of the solo. And he's preparing, you know, the ending of the blues. Remembers that he's playing the blues, so after this huge scream, you know, and phrase, he plays again a top note, an altissimo G, but harmonically he relaxes and then ends his solo with a beautiful and gorgeous bluesy sound. So even this exit, you know, it's very simple and you look at it and you say, yep, I can do it. But for some reasons, for us mortals, it's a little bit harder because we overthink. Very usually we overthink stuff. We think that we need to play very complex, very fast, absurd things to impress people. But you have a solid tempo, solid rhythm, a great articulation, nice ideas. You keep it simple and solid and you become a legend like them. And then you listen to this resolution and I have a question for you. How many of you think he's going to end his solo? And how many of you are thinking, oh no, there's more? I don't think that's the case. I think everyone, even the non-experienced improviser, they hear this and they understand that the solo is finishing, is ending. So if we understand, also the musicians that are playing in that moment understand. And that's why the whole band sounds like, okay, we know what we are doing. We are playing together. And it's like Joel Frame telling them clearly, this is the end of my solo. And this is how we communicate clear ideas, nice ideas, stand for your ideas, and repeat yourself, make your statement very clear. And if you play the blues, play the blues. So guys, keep supporting this channel with some subscription. The whole transcription of this solo is available on my website, www.mircoguerrini.com, among all the other transcriptions that I made. Drop me a question, a comment on this video if you agree or if you disagree with what I just said, and I'll see you next time. Bye.